Welcome to The Choice.
This is Kurt Doolittle, Episode 8, Why We Can't Respond to COVID. The Deep Answer. A reader asks, Kurt, would a communist or socialist government solve the COVID problem better than we have? Well, communism and socialism are impossible for reasons we've known for a century now. A, human cognition is acquisitive in structure. B, humans require good incentive or we'll find worse ones. C, economic calculation is impossible, although this is still a matter of some scholarly debate, and they're wrong. Capitalism isn't possible for reasons we know, and we know that cosmopolitan capitalist movement was a war on the European rule of law of reciprocity. European rule of law will produce markets and will produce capital concentration and the gains of consumer capitalism, but rule of law won't allow for internationalization or export of profits and would require nationalization of those profits and conversion of those profits into commons for the people. So the communist capitalist debate was always another Marxist hand wave, a fraud. Communism and capitalism are ruled by men. Rule by of law prevents rule by men and prohibits the corruption of communism and the criminality of capitalism. So I think this the reader means, do you mean the Chinese model? If you mean, is the Chinese authoritarian, expansionist, racist, nationalist, state capitalist model superior to the one we have? Well, the Chinese didn't copy the communists. They aren't a communist government. Instead, they copied the Nazis. They're a fascist government. And what they have done, as the Germans did, is prove fascism, not democracy, not social democracy, not communism, won the war of political models of the 19th and 20th centuries. Well, because intolerance for political competition is good, the leadership is desperate to maintain legitimacy by keeping the people happy. That's good. They used debt, meaning state capitalism, instead of forced labor, like state socialism and the USSR did, which is good. They created a military an economy rather than a military first. That was good, and they're using that economy to build the world's dominant military, which is good, which in turn they will use to replace the USA as the world reserve currency, and then they will have conquered us economically without a fight. But this question is a great example of repeating my message that there's only one possible form of economy. That's a mixed economy of state labor, subsidized labor, market organization of market labor, private investment in short-term returns, and state investment in long-term capital investment returns. And there's really only one possible form of government, a dynamic one of military authoritarian, republic market, and social democratic redistributive, depending on whatever the conditions are. Because there's really no steady state in nature, and all civilizations must constantly adapt to change. The Romans understood this, and in our search for ideal perfect government since the Enlightenment, we seem not to. We seem to have failed consistently that there is an ideal form of government. There is instead just there's a good reason for constitutional military aristocracy and their monarchy in times of war and crisis. There's a good reason for upper middle class and republican governments in times of peace. And there's a great argument for lower houses of parliament for the common people in times of windfalls, the only which is mostly what we've seen since the Industrial Revolution, and it ended by 1970. The only problem is developing the method of shifting from primarily republican in economic government to monarchic and military government in times of war to redistribution government in times of windfalls. This is, as I understand it, the only remaining question in political theory. It's the only question I know of that remains. Creating our fragility. The Jewish post-war anti-European initiative to move the failed communist movement to America and to change it first to neo-Marxism, meaning instead of undermining the cooperation between the classes, changing it to cultural Marxism to undermine the civilization itself, then to undermine Western law, tradition, and culture, then postmodernism, which is the social construction of falsehoods through repetition, as we see in political correctness, and feminism, which was meant to undermine the family and the tradition. And this was successful in demilitarizing Western civilization in Europe post-war, and then in the American civilization during the Vietnam era. Used the Vietnam and the crisis of the civil rights movement in order to demilitarize America and delegitimize the military. The military still conducts continuous exercises and frequent self-falsification exercises. I mean, they run war games. Now, these war games serve to train for emergencies, and they test the organization with shocks. But without traditional military service or militia service by a large number of men, or a requirement for military service to serve in politics or in the bureaucracy, the empirical, pessimistic, risk-driven military epistemology which has been the source of European excellence, has been eradicated not only from the political sphere, but from the bureaucracy and the public too. We've just failed to maintain traditional European anti-fragility and instead become fragile. We're unable to adapt to shocks. It's the military experience that makes organizations able to adapt to shocks, rather than to settle into sedentary regular expectations of continuous invariant work and continuous expectations of growth. Instead, as happens in all organizations not subject to stress and shocks, work expands by employees to fill all available time, and employee income and benefits seek to consume all available capital, and the core mission is continuously and incrementally sacrificed for employee and bureaucratic consumption. This applies to all state monopolies and to most publicly traded companies alike. The only continuous market pressure that generates good civic behavior is in the small and medium business owners and the independent craftsmen and laborers. It's where you tend to find the moral people in America, and you tend to find the immoral ones in large corporations, the government, and the media enterprises. So this is why there's such a political divide. The chief function of a college education is to allow people to exit the market, and their responsibility for obtaining opportunities and producing outcomes. And with the decline in farming as the primary small business, and with the intentional absence of required education in economics and law to make the public informed, we create an ignorant population lacking both Republican, meaning economic, and aristocratic, meaning military education, and they're unable to adapt to change and shocks. They're not even able to bear stresses. It's the snowflake phenomenon. So when we encounter a shock, it's not possible to switch from social democratic redistributive government or employee satisfaction bureaucracy or social and economic organizations to a Republican government, which is what really our President Trump is trying to do. He's trying, and it's not working. Or to govern like statesmen, independent of one's political party. And we can't even imagine shifting back to a military order, which all of us must sacrifice for the common good in order to achieve a national goal. We all expect mommy and daddy in government to do it for us, except mommy and daddy in government no longer have the processes or skills necessary to respond to shocks. What's been done to the public has been, of course, done to the entire institutional system. So now we come to the COVID failure. The WHO is first and foremost a political organization, and a very expensive one, founded in the post-war period where Americans maintained the British Empire. They took over the UK pound and as the world reserve currency, and using its navy, regulated the world standard of political behavior. But today, while the Americans pay a substantial price for the WHO, it's also paid for by the Chinese. And the difference is Americans aren't very demanding. We let the organization go and we let it be unaccountable. But Chinese aren't that way. They want every dollar to produce a return on Chinese strategic policy. So the organization is compromised, and frankly, it's of no value whatsoever. the WHO, the World Bank, the UN, and NATO are effectively anti-European political organizations captured by the world market, totally interested in bureaucratic self-sufficiency because they're trying to maximize their own personal extraction with doing as little as possible, well, because that's what bureaucracies do. But at least they aren't domestic organizations. That's offshore. I mean, the WHO doesn't really affect us too much domestically. Conversely, Homeland Security and the CDC are both failures, and they will continue to be. The Homeland Security, Disaster Recovery, and CDC don't regularly run self-falsifying war games that are designed to test their points of failure and test their networks. Matter of fact, if you look at the budget for Homeland Security and how disaster recovery is supposed to be managed, you realize it's just a bureaucratic bunch of paper shuffling. There's actually no organization under it. There's no assets under it. And it's really dependent on being able to easily move resources from one part of the country to another in case we have, let's say, another tornado or hurricane. None of these organizations are set up to check themselves for disasters that affect the whole country, as is the military. So they have no influence or responsibility for transforming American manufacturing to the production of strategic necessities at national scale. They were designed for small problems like hurricanes, or not the large problems of war in our economy, war in our infrastructure, war by plague, war by accidental plague, or by volcanic eruption. Why? Because it's expensive, and that would mean devoting money to testing and falsifying and making them change and adapt rather than, and showing that they were capable, rather than employee intellectual satisfaction, career advance, and income consumption and benefits consumption, which is basically what these organizations do and how they work and why, if you look around the greater Washington area, there's so much wealth there and it's being extracted from the rest of the country who does need capital investment instead. The only organization capable of performing crisis organization is the military, and thanks to the Clinton-Obama undermining of the military by turning it from a purely empirical, purely results-oriented, purely crisis-oriented mission into a social program for the redistribution of income away from working-class American males, it doesn't appear our military can perform that crisis function any longer either. The simple example to illustrate the problem is that Prussia alone created European martial excellence and created the German economic miracle as a consequence of its discipline, where the French had to have a bloody revolution that they cannot ever recover from. The Chinese and Red Army could recover. India doesn't have that army and can't. The Arab world can't even make an army and has to rely on terrorists to get their strategic work done, hence the rise of Turkey as the non-Arab but only Islamic power capable of organizing. The foundation of Western civilization is this military tradition. It's where our politics, our laws, our technology, our reason, our empiricism, our science and medicine, and our rapid evolution, so much faster than every other civilization combined, where that all came from. It's where our adaptability came from. It's where our Roman adapted government came from. It's where our commercial and technological adaptability came from. And for reasons historians will explain later in great detail, but are primarily due to the post-war movement of civilizational undermining from Europe, where it succeeded in the destruction by Jewish Bolshevism in Russia, causing European fascism to rise to resist it, and then creating the Second World War that destroyed European civilization and its empires. They brought it to America, where the Jewish Bolshevist, communist, neo-Marxist, postmodernist, anti-male feminist, human difference denial movement, really the counter-eugenics movement, found home. The most likely candidate for our decline is, what caused the made us most fragile was something I've talked about quite often, which is upon granting women the franchise in exchange for their entry into the workforce, thanks to automation, we failed to give women a separate house of government from men, because in retrospect, as in Rome, it was women in the underclasses that fell for the false promises of Marxism, postmodernism, feminism, political correctness, and continued the Puritan Puritan program of Christianity and continued to undermine our homogeneity. So just as women and slaves in the underclass fell for the false promise of Christianity in the modern, in the ancient world, and gave us Dark Ages. Unfortunately, women fell for the false promises of postmodernism and feminism and anti-maleism we've seen, and have fostered immigration. So they have brought about a replication of the fall of the Roman Empire. So, in summary, welcome to the next Dark Age. Welcome to our failure to pass the Great Filter. The Great Filter is what prevents advanced civilizations from forming the universe. Welcome to recognition of why the universe is empty of advanced life. The miracle of cooperation, the miracle of division of labor, they just contain the seeds of their own demise. The failure to persist, martial empiricism, the failure to persist, selection pressure by the market, and the exhaustion of planetary resources. I hope that was depressing enough for you. This is Kurt Doolittle for The Choice.